Welcome to Private Club Radio, your weekly source for industry education, news and discussion. Broadcasting from Tampa, Florida, ladies and gentlemen, here is your host, Gabriel Aloisi.
Welcome to the 70th episode of Private Club Radio. 70, that's crazy. Some of you listening have listened to each and every one of these episodes. You've tuned in 70 weeks in a row to listen to this show. Those are super fans right there, and I really appreciate it. Thank you guys. Those are the ones who are spreading the word, making sure that this show is heard by more people because, quite frankly, it's the best education out there. There's nothing like this show. And I don't say that to brag in any way, not at all. It's not because of me, and it's certainly not because of me. I'm just the host. But we have really some of the best talent in the private club industry each and every week that come on this show. Our guests do it because they love this industry. They're not getting paid. They're coming on because they have something of value that they know the private club world needs to hear. And I appreciate that they do that. They take their time. Each week for 70 weeks, someone has taken their time to be on this show. And I'm honored and humbled by that because this was just a little dream I had a couple years ago. I thought it would be something valuable, and it's turned into something so much more. It's like going to a conference, and you've probably heard me say that before, but it's like going to a conference every single week. And there's people out there that can't get to the conferences, and this is what they've got. And so I really thank our guests that come on this show, because without them, it would not be a show. It would be me blabbering, and you'd probably get tired of that really, really quickly. But great show for you today. In fact, we have two fantastic guests coming on. First of all, we're going to talk to Gary Collins of Master Club Advisors, and we're going to talk about golf and charity and the impact that golf has. There's a stat, $3.9 billion is raised annually because of golf. And to me, that's astounding. $3.9 billion with a B, an astounding fact. And we're going to talk to Gary about how your club can take the existing tournaments you have and raise even more money for these charities. So he's got some great ideas for that. We're also going to chat with Dr. Matthew J. Sammel. He's the student faculty advisor for the JWU student chapter of the CMAA. And he is a professor at Johnson & Wales University in the College of Hospitality Management. We talked to him about this new breed of managers coming through the ranks, this younger generation. Some people call them the millennials. You've heard me talk about that generation quite a bit on this show, but I really enjoyed speaking with Matthew because he has some insights that, quite frankly, you're not going to get elsewhere because he's right down there in the trenches about what these students want to see when they're coming out and starting their careers and really the value that they can offer to clubs right here and right now because it's a unique perspective. So we're going to talk to Matt about that and going to have a lot of fun on today's episode. A lot of insights going to be brought to light here today. Now, before we bring on Gary Collins, an announcement for you, for those of you who bought the book, The Definitive Guide to Membership Marketing, I'm going to be holding an online meeting, and I'm calling it a meeting, not a webinar, because I want this to be a back and forth conversation with readers. But I'm holding it the week after, actually. And what we're going to be doing is discussing some of the principles in the book, giving you a little bit more insight into my philosophies and core methodology when it comes to membership marketing. So this is a chance, if you have any questions, because there's a lot of content in this book, obviously it's 40,000 odd words, 200 page book, basically. There's a lot of ideas and principles and a lot of new things in there for folks. And so I wanted to give everyone the opportunity to ask any questions. There's no charge for this whatsoever. But it's happening May 18th at 1 p.m. Eastern. I guess that would make it, 10 a.m. Pacific? So if you have questions that you want to ask, if you have just some things you want to work through, see how the principles can actually be applied to your club, I invite you to shoot me an email. Just send me an email. Gabe@privateclubagency is probably the best one. Shoot me an email and just let me know you'd like to attend. I'll get that registration link over to you. It is really for people who have read the book, because if you haven't read the book, you might be a little lost. But if you've read the book and want to discuss it further, I would love for you to be on that conversation. There's going to be already, I think we've got about 20 people signed up around the country. So you'll be on with some peers as well on that call. So just shoot me an email, gabe@privateclubagency.com. All right, it's time for our monthly masterclass.
And now, It's time for your monthly masterclass, presented by Master Club Advisors.
Well, on this masterclass, I'm joined by Gary Collins, partner at Master Club Advisors. Gary, welcome to Private Club Radio once again.
Gabe, thank you. It's always fun to be with you, my friend.
Yeah, today we're going to be chatting about charity tournaments and the impact that they can have, not only on the game of golf, but really in the community. I did see a statistic from the National Golf Foundation that over $3.9 billion are raised yearly in club golf tournaments. Tell me a little bit about that, Gary.
It's absolutely unbelievable. We should do better PR for ourselves. As you know, being in the private club business, sometimes it's pretty easy to make us a political target, an unattractive political target, to add taxes to us or whatever else. And most of the people that do that really don't understand the private club world. I'm going to be off point and on point a little bit. As you know, our financial impact in the state of Florida is huge. It's bigger than citrus.
Right.
I mean, people are trying to attract industries that create jobs, and we have one of the biggest payrolls in the state. But also, a big part of our what we do is it's a wealthy demographic in private clubs, but they're very generous. Mm-hmm. We are big givers to charity. We are a huge charity. I find this statistic absolutely amazing. The statistic you saw about $3.9 billion, if you added together Major League Baseball, NFL, the National Football League, the NBA, and hockey, add all four of them together, they don't even come close to what golf does by itself.
Wow, that's golf, shocking. I would never expect that.
It's shocking. And golf and private clubs are such good citizens. We do so many good things to help our community. And, you know, we're talking to our own audience here, and I don't want to sound like I'm trying to pat ourselves on the back, breaking our arm, but it is true. I think many people do not realize how much, what an important and integral part of the community we are, not only in terms of payroll and jobs, but in terms of charitable economic impact. I mean, we exceed all four major sports. I mean, that is
crazy.
It's crazy. And yeah. I think it's a mind-blowing statistic most people do not recognize until it's pointed out, and they're like, oh my God, I do see that.
Right. Yeah. It's great we're talking about this, because just Monday, I just was in a tournament. It was the Ronald McDonald Charities Classic over at Lake Nona Golf and Country Club, which first and foremost was a phenomenal club I had never visited, and just wonderful service, exceptional. But the tournament raised over $150,000 that day for the charity alone, just that one day tournament. And I know that, you know, clubs around the country are doing tournaments like this, and maybe they're raising $10,000, $15,000, but I know you think that they're actually leaving a lot of money on the table, a lot of these tournaments. So let's talk about that, the business of putting on these events, and how can they actually raise more money?
Boy, you hit the nail on the head, and it sounds like fun. I wish I'd have been at Lake Nona with you.
Oh, it was great. I was actually on the tee box right next to Annika Sorenstam, was hitting a few shots at the driving range. It was really cool.
One of my favorite courses. That's a great place to be. You can't make it up in the world of golf. The most amazing and fun things happen when you're out there.
Yep.
And $150,000 is a great tournament. Mm-hmm. But you are 100% correct. You know, I'm on the CMAA Seminole Region Charity Committee. I've been on that committee for 17 years. When we started this, now Jay DiPietro and the guys at Boca West started it. This is our 27th year, so it had been going 10 years before I moved to Florida to do my 17 years. But when we started, I think something like we got like $10,000 the first year.
Wow.
We're up to over $600,000 a year.
That's incredible.
$600,000 a year. And you know, lifetime, we're over 10 million now or something. And I've been putting together a program for presentation to chapters around the country, because I firmly believe that many chapters are doing good, fun charity events, but they're not even scratching the surface of what their real potential is.
Mm-hmm.
They're like so many things. It's like you're a marketing guy. I mean, you market club memberships, and everything is in the detail. Mm-hmm. Little twist here and there that can really make a difference, that can take you from a tournament that generates $10,000 or $20,000, which, by the way, is still not a bad. There are many charities that would love to have that $10,000 or $20,000.
Right.
But at the same time, if you're going through all the work and you can get to 20 or 10 or 20, with a little bit more work, if you can get to 150, like you did at Lake Nona, you know, let's look at that little bit more of work. It's just like anything else in life, built around marketing and built around what we can do. But little twists that we can put on it can make a huge difference.
Yeah. So can you let us in on just a couple high level things that maybe right off the top of your head clubs could actually do to make those tournaments a little bit more profitable for the charities?
Yes. A lot of people in Florida already know about this one because we've been at this now as our seventh year. But this is a perfect example that we ourselves almost needed to slap ourselves and say, we should have done this, not 7 years ago. We should have done it 17 years ago. Mm-hmm. But with the Seminole Region Charity Tournament, we had reached about $500,000 donation every year, and we were really proud of it. But, the economy went down and the real estate period there when the real estate in the bottom fell out, and we dropped to about 400,000. It was the first time we'd ever gone backwards in many, many years. And so we're all sitting around the table brainstorming, saying, what can we do to breathe new life back into this thing and get more money? And what we came up with isn't new. It's been around forever, but it's just a question of tweaking it and making it a little different. So anyway, I say, you know what, J.D. Pietro at Boca West is the mm-hmm. chairman. I'm going to try a marathon golf this year. And, Jay's like, whoa, marathon golf, explain this to me. Well, you play as many holes as you can, and you try and get people to donate, a dollar or two a hole or some amount. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, how much? I don't know for sure, but I think I could maybe bring in $25,000. I had done this once before out in Colorado. And he started laughing. He said, I don't believe you'll never get to $25,000. So anyway, we added the marathon golf to the entire tournament. It's actually leads up and goes on for the entire week before the gala uh-huh. and main tournament on June 11th and 12th. So anyway, we added the first year, and it was really funny. My members knew I was doing it. My members were supporting me doing it, but they were all laughing and saying, oh my God, Gary, you're getting old. You'll never play more than 30 holes. you'll pass out before lunch.
Right.
But, so we set a goal and we got to 108 holes.
Oh my goodness. 108 wow. holes. Is that one day? One day?
Gary? One day.
Wow.
One day. And we got Matt Lambert at Marisol and Mike McCarthy over at Addison to also participate. And they had teams that got there. And so we got to $25,000 year one. We're like, wow, this is pretty good.
You guys were playing the red tees, weren't you? You were playing the red tees, let's be honest.
It is a trick that some of the experts have learned later. But we don't, this is one of the fun things about marathon golf. People say, well, what are the rules? There aren't any rules. Just play as much golf as you can. We don't care what tee you play. We don't care if you concede putts. But now, more detail than you want, I'll get into some other things that mm-hmm. change that a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, some of the guys, just to avoid boredom, would actually play the tips in one round and the forward in the next round.
Oh, that's cool.
See what yeah. Just to see what happens. By the way, that develops some other interesting data about forward tees. We're going to talk about it in our next conversation.
Definitely.
But anyway, we get to $25,000. Well, last year was our sixth year, and we got to 16 teams participating, and we raised $210,000.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
$210,000. And this is net. So many charity events, and there's a reason. There's got to be overhead. We all understand it. Our gala, which is spectacular, we keep the overhead down, and we have the food donated. But you need to pay the people to work. I mean, listen, so many charity events, you got to fly in the celebrity, you got to pay the bartenders, you got to pick up the bar tab. The thing about marathon golf is it's net.
Right.
None of the club charges to play. There's no expenses to doing it. Mm-hmm. Whatever you bring in, you keep.
Yeah.
And I mean, $210,000 right to the bottom line. And all our money in the Seminole region goes to South Florida Children's Charities, SOS Children's Village. Incredible. They keep families together, foster children they have there, Special Olympics, Unicorn Village, which works with autism, Florence mm-hmm. Fuller, which does preschool and education. I mean, the stuff they do in Florence Fuller is amazing. And if you ever see their statistics, the money we would spend in helping preschoolers get better saves a gazillion dollars on the other end of in producing viable citizens with income and not in jail and on and on and on. I mean, it's incredible what these charities do. Place of Hope and First Tee are also part of our deal. And everybody in golf loves First Tee. I can get a little long-winded talking about this. I'm going to play on May 8th. Last year, I got to 150 holes.
Oh, wow.
We like to say that PGA Tour, they play 72 holes Thursday through Sunday. So we played more than 2 weeks on the PGA Tour in one day.
Oh, my goodness.
Has a little fun that makes people be a little more interested in contributing. People have had fun things with this. They have contests between departments. The F&B department plays the golf department. At Marisol this year, they're doing something based on the World Wrestling Federation. You should see the video. It's hilarious. Mm-hmm. They have team captains dressed in wrestling costumes. You know, they got the mask on and the whole nine yards. But I didn't mean to get long-winded about only ours. Mm-hmm. I do believe that we can help other regions look at little details, not just in the marathon golf, but in the main tournament.
Yeah.
We're now doing $600,000 and $400,000 comes from the gala and main tournament in round numbers, but $200,000 is coming from marathon golf, one third, two thirds.
Mm-hmm.
So a typical CMA region adds marathon golf to their region, and they've probably had at least a third additional that more than they were getting before.
Wow. And yeah, is there one other two quick tips we can have? I know we don't have a ton of time, but you could give that have worked for you guys.
I think the biggest thing that really worked for us was really establishing a reputation. I mean, we, you know, just as you, when you went to Lake Nona, you had fun. Yeah. We really have a quality mm-hmm. event.
Mm-hmm.
And this, everybody does that. And I don't mean to be preaching to the choir because all the guys in the club business know how to put on an event.
Right.
But over the years, we've really tweaked it with little things that are fun, from a bazooka you can shoot for your tee shot that shoots a golf ball out there about 350 yards to on the golf course. Of course, we have Nathan's and Great Hot Dogs, but we also have lobster. I mean, every six holes, there's a food station, and we have tenderloin and lobster. I mean, you get it isn't your typical.
Nice.
Any little thing you can do to make your tournament different and better
mm-hmm.
calls attention to it.
Right.
It's just like in marketing. It doesn't have to be that upper end stuff, but what about your event's different and better? What
right.
about your event makes people want to be at that event more than any other event?
Yeah, I like that. Well, the other great thing about these charity tournaments is it builds some great PR and some goodwill within the community, which of course puts a few more eyes where you're not having to market yourself, but the local newspaper or radio station or television station is telling your story for you. And I think that's another benefit of putting on these charity events.
No question. You're a marketer and you get that instantly. You know, PR firms will constantly talk about having your name out there in print associated with positive things as opposed to even purchased advertising.
Yeah.
Goes miles and miles.
Mm-hmm.
And for us as club managers, I have to say it really improves our image. CMAA is the behind our tournament and what we're trying to work on with other chapters. I firmly believe that the GCSA, the Golf Course Superintendents Association, has done a staggeringly good job of promoting the golf course superintendents, and they deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And the PGA does a spectacular job with all their major tournaments every week. And the truth is, we are lagging a little bit behind, and we're really a part of all of them.
Yeah,
you know, we're part of all those PGA tournaments. But by putting on our CMAA events, not only do we put our club out there in a positive light, we put our profession and our industry out there in a perfect light.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well said, Gary. Well said. Now, I want to talk to you about Master Club Advisors. I mean, I just love that you guys have these outside the box ideas and you guys really think differently. So tell me more about Master Club Advisors and how you guys help clubs.
You know, listen, everybody, I think when you're a club manager, and every club manager out there who listens to this and works in this industry, in our heart, you know, we're servants. We like to be servant leaders. We all read the books. But the truth is, we really want to make people successful, and we work hard to make them successful. Norm and I really, really love it when we make a good match, when the club's happy and the manager's happy and his family's happy, they're in a good place. We go above and beyond to really try and understand what the club needs. I just recently did a placement just near Notre Dame, just outside South Bend, Indiana. A big part of it was really spending time at the club and learning about the board and the club and learning about the other department heads and learning what it is that they want in a general manager, so that when we're filling this position, listen, we're looking for all the same skill sets that everybody looks for. You know, you got to be good at marketing. You got to be good at food and beverage. You got to be good at governance. You got to be a good communicator. You have to be a leader. I mean, on and on and on. But all our guys in this industry, between CMAA and the hospitality schools, be it Cornell or Cal Poly or Florida State, we have really top-notch education out there today. So we have a lot of really talented club managers. We think the little extra thing that we really provide is really understanding both the client, the club, and the applicants so that we can make a good match mm-hmm. so that everybody's happy.
Yep.
And we have that servant heart. I mean, we come to work wanting everybody to be successful and working hard to make that happen.
Yeah, You sure do. And you do go above and beyond. In fact, you've got a great resource of our industry. It's called Club Management Perspectives. It's a newsletter. It comes out monthly, I believe. And I think everybody should be reading that publication, because the stuff that's in there is just stuff you don't get anywhere else.
Gabe, really, thank you for that. And it's absolutely true. And any of your listeners, anybody, feel free to reach out to me at gcollins98@att.net. or 561-261-3554, and I'll provide you some complimentary past copies. But the people that write for that are absolute industry leaders, and you get truly actionable, valuable information that will help you run your club better every day.
Yep, absolutely. Gary, thank you so much for joining me on Private Club Radio and another edition of Masterclass. And I hope folks will reach out to you, get a copy of Club Management Perspectives, and hopefully find out some ways that they can run some better tournaments at their club, more profitable for those charities. Thank you so much.
Gabe, thank you. It's always fun talking to you.
To learn more about Master Club Advisors, visit them on the web at masterclubadvisors.com and join us next month for another masterclass.
My guest today is Dr. Matthew J. Sammel. He is a professor at the Johnson & Wales University, the College of Hospitality Management. Dr. Sammel holds a PhD in organization and management with a specialization in human resources. His focus of study is on organizational culture and person organizational fit. He has operational training and human resources work experience in a variety of industry segments, including hotels, independently and corporately owned restaurant organizations, and private clubs. Dr. Sammel is a member of the CMAA, the Academy of Management, and the Society of Human Resource Management. And Dr. Sammel is the current faculty advisor for the JWU Student CMAA chapter. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gabe. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Well, I'd first like to discuss the role of faculty advisors. Can you tell us about the position and why it's so important in the private club industry?
Sure. That's a great way to start. So faculty advisor is a volunteer position. The university has about 100 to 110 clubs and organizations on campus, but they're delineated by social organizations, professional organizations, and other focus clubs. So CMAA is a professional organization, and the role of the faculty member is to help students first, specifically within private club, understand what private clubs are and the opportunities that are offered in that type of industry segment versus hotels or restaurants. But the key role is to act as a liaison between the national and the regional opportunities in terms of education, conferences, and to really get the student who's interested in the industry kind of an immersion. Mm-hmm. So we do club tours at the local clubs. So instead of holding chapter meetings, as an example, in a classroom, we'll go to an actual club in the local area, typically where we would find an alum from Johnson & Wales who would be a general manager. But we try to provide an experience where we go to different types of clubs. And we do this on a monthly basis, sometimes twice a month during the academic year.
Wow.
And in addition, really try to create this introduction. I think the more opportunity that students get to spend time with club managers, it's important to their decision-making about employment, permanent employment.
Yeah, absolutely. So what new perspective have you gained since you've been in this advisory role?
Well, I've obviously had a little work experience in the club environment at Washington Golf and Country Club, but the perspective is really being able to allow students firsthand not only visitation, but being able to get them internships. The club industry offers a wide variety of types of internship, and in the variety of disciplines we offer. So as an example, not only food and beverage, we could have accounting majors, we can have graduate school level students. So it's not as finite in terms of opportunities, which is great. It allows a variety of students to join the club. But the internship programs especially are a very good lead into the feel, not only the feel of a club, but what they will be doing in the workplace, which is very different than hotels and restaurants.
Yeah, absolutely. So if clubs are looking to, you know, hire this new generation as interns or as managers in trainings, what types of things will make them attractive to these kinds of students?
Yeah, so it's really interesting with the millennial generation and even I would say as a whole with young professionals that are coming up in management roles or general managers that are looking to put a team together. There are just some unique aspects of the private club industry work environment. One of which, and once the student really understands this, or I would say any young manager, even transferring from another industry segment, that it's really service focused. Mm-hmm. The nuts and bolts of managing a private club, the major decisions are made by the membership through governance, through committees. So it's almost like a parallel work environment.
Yeah.
In essence, I mean, the way you look at it, or the way I look at it, and I try to instill this in the educational interaction with students, is you have 300 bosses. So that may be overwhelming, but when you can focus on service, or what I actually talk about is a servitude relationship, mm-hmm. understanding that it's the members' needs. So the difficulty for early managers, as an example, that fall in operations, I know it sounds like a little thing, but like cash management systems. Mm-hmm. In the club environment, you are not dealing with that. You're not going to a table and trying to do a credit card transaction or a cash transaction. So many of the elements that are time consuming and really are not that service oriented are taken away from that in the club environment. Most clubs direct bill on a monthly basis. So it allows the time to develop relationships. And that's really the difference. It's they're members; they're not customers. Mm-hmm. It allows employees of a club to develop relationships with the members over time to really get to know what their needs and wants are. And this generation, the millennials especially, are looking. They're looking for that. They highly value deep levels of communication and relationship. And one of the other very unique aspects, I think, of the club industry is that, in terms of relationships, is civility. Civility in the workplace, especially as compared to other industry segments, is a key differentiator. So the ability to not only develop the relationships, but how a private club conducts their business internally, through their members and membership and membership committees. But the level of, some may say it's professionalism, but it's not professionalism. I think one of the concerns of senior club managers, and I hear this a lot at conferences and other educational sessions and interactions with club managers, is that they feel that they're concerned with the traditional values being lost, mm-hmm. of the private club industry.
Right.
And really, that's hard to kind of put your finger on. What do they mean by that? So when they say that, I have no doubt that what they're talking about is, in essence, traditional values of not only the historical nature of clubs, but the civility. We talk about, the game of golf. We talk about how people act. We talk about, I love seeing as memberships do training for the younger members, like they do, especially even children, where they're doing etiquette dinners. Mm-hmm. All of this has to do with the topic of civility.
Right.
Well, millennials, if you look at any of the research that's done with on millennials, beyond honesty and trust, authenticity is what they're looking for. And authenticity has to do with building these relationships in a way that they're going to respond to. And it can't be, traditionally you see restaurants and hotels are very high stress environments. I'm not saying you're not, the managers are not working hard at clubs, but it's in a very different manner. So if I were a general manager trying to put a team together, and especially from an HR perspective, human, you know, we talk about, you said in my bio, we talk about person organization fit. So we look at skills and ability, but then we look for these hard to measure characteristics. So if you think about civility being higher on that list, like above professionalism, you know, I really think that's a different focus, because it's not like a guest. I mean, sometimes these conversations when you're dealing with guest complaints are heightened. That just can't happen in a club.
Right.
And
because they got to see him the next day.
Right. And it's, you know, I mean, I think the senior managers understand that, but it's getting that instilled, the service attitude. And I say to all the students that I interact with, you know, private clubs are probably the last place where you get to practice your craft. So I talk to culinary students who, you know, they go and they're doing a formal education and they're doing all these garmagés, ice carvings and all, you know, all this very high end. Well, other than club industry, you know, or high end hotels, I really don't see where they're doing that.
Right.
And even on the event side, we have a very strong sports entertainment and event program. And, you know, I look at the students, where are they going to do that type of job?
Sure.
Now, where I know we have a private club that supports us in the Massachusetts area, and it's an alum, great general manager. They did 100 events at their club last year.
Wow.
Right? So, and it's all to get the members, giving them a reason to come to the club rather than seeking consumption of product or service in another area.
Sure. I want to talk to you about service, because I know you have some ideas on some services that clubs could begin to offer that wouldn't really take a huge capital expenditure, but would make the members' lives that much more easy and fulfilling. And I think it would be something that millennials and the younger generations might also align with. Can you tell us about those?
Sure. That's a great segue, because it's another opportunity, I would say, that private club managers, I would encourage them to get in touch with the local faculty advisors, especially in terms of what I offer. We teach a class in hospitality, in private club management, where we do projects, and I take the students to the clubs and, you know, what kind of projects. So some of these ideas that I'm going to share really came out of student brainstorming sessions.
Nice.
The overall thought process is, I'm a club member. I consume goods and services just like anyone else outside the club. Beyond doing capital expenditures, like everybody's talking, I see gym and health as a, and spa as a new area that clubs are offering.
Right.
But they require capital expenditures.
A big one.
So big. I mean, you make the decision to create a gym. It can't be a bunch of weights and a treadmill in the basement of the club.
Right.
It's got to be It's got to be at least at the level of wherever they're going to the gym outside the club. And to that point, when you think about offering additional goods and services to your club members beyond what the competition is out, it still has to be maintained at the level of your other services you're providing at the club. Like, you can't have superior food and beverage service and then have a really poor yoga program. It just has to, you know, I don't think the club member differentiates that at all. This is the level of expectation.
Right.
So some of those member services that really the students were talking about, it led into, we were working on a project of a local club where they were trying to redo a space that was a barber shop. Well, the club membership had changed, where there were a lot more female members, and they were trying to convert this into like a unisex salon. Mm-hmm. So then we got into this conversation of, well, what are the other services that members are are consuming. And we sort of put a member survey, a mini survey together. And some of the things they talked about was laundry service. So a member is going to take their dry cleaning somewhere. Mm-hmm. So we thought about, the conversation was, what are all the stops a member might make on the way to the club? Nice. So they're dropping off their dry cleaning. Mm-hmm. So why can't they just drop that off at the club? I'm sure that's an easy relationship for the club to develop, similar to how you would be in a hotel and there's laundry service in a hotel.
Right.
Tailoring services.
I love that. I'd love to have a nice suit made after a round of golf. That'd be pretty fun.
Right. So think about those relationships with the community and the level of clothing. And that came from really a general manager's idea. They were driving behind a high-end car and they thought to themselves, well, why can't we just bring the cars and park them in the parking lot of the club? Because I'll tell you, a member may not, and I think this is a generalization, typically people don't want to go to the car dealership.
Yeah. Nobody wants the sharks to come swimming at them.
and even in high-end cars, I think there's a certain, you want to feel comfortable. So park the Maseratis in the parking lot.
Right. I love that idea.
So you create these opportunities that are low investment but high relationship.
Well, I love that they all keep them coming back to the club for those things that they would be going elsewhere for. And that's what I think is really strong about that.
Yeah. And the other things, I thought the students, one of the great things of working with students is they're not barred by any ideas. So right. This came out of like a 30-minute brainstorming session where, no idea is a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
But they talked about, you don't even need the facilities. If I were going to do a yoga class, this is student speaking, if I were going to do that, you're going to hire a professional, just like you have your club, your golf professional, your tennis professional. And they're looking at me like, right? I go, yeah, absolutely. There's going to be somebody who's certified in whatever that is. They said, but you don't need the space. You do it in a space that's not currently used. So they talked about dawn and dusk yoga classes and doing it outside.
Oh, it should definitely be outside. I would put it right on the putting green.
Right. That's... Well, your club superintendent might not be happy about that. But on the first tee space,
right,
that's perfect.
Sure.
I think one of the characteristics of especially this new generation, everybody thinks about the technology, and that's great, but the ideas.
Right.
They have sound ideas, especially students who are attending a university for management. They can connect the dots. They may not be very vocal about it because mm-hmm. I think any student in my experience with students is they're not necessarily confident, which is another good aspect of the industry. I think general managers and managers, once students go to like the CMAA World Conference, they get this sense of mentorship mm-hmm. and how they're willing to work one-on-one and they're not looking for big numbers. And because it's vested, there's two processes behind that. They have a vested interest in being able to develop a manager even beyond their own club, because it's not really a competitive environment.
Right. Right.
And that's another really, really unique aspect of the industry.
Yeah. So let's talk about some other strengths that these younger generations have beyond ideation. What are some other things that they really excel at?
So they're really good at thinking analytically. And, some say, I've seen mixed reviews on being able to analytically think and put the dots together because they don't focus for long periods of time on it. Well, the other side of that is when I grew up, I didn't have the access to information immediately that they have. So although they're really good at gathering large amounts of information on a topic, they're not necessarily great at assimilating that into implementable plans. But I think that's part of the learning process. Like they'll find you, I don't know, 20 or 30 good advertising and promotion ideas. Really good at gathering that information. Mm-hmm. But integrating that, again, goes back to how do we use the information? On the same token, they can, at least students who are studying in the hospitality realm, who understand operations, they certainly can show you how to use technology to better service a guest. Mm-hmm. We had this discussion about, they want to do everything on the phone. Well, one of the issues in clubs, and it's been an issue for a while, is what's the cell phone policy?
Right.
So some of the things I've been seeing being at clubs and interacting with managers is they're going to this non-sound communication. That's the policy now. No ringtones, no talking on the phone.
Right.
Well, that opened up a whole new idea for this generation. One of the examples I'll give you is, so why can't we have somebody who's on the golf cart on the course pre-order a meal through their phone so that when they make the turn, they can get a sandwich?
Yeah, my app does that actually. The course driver app we built, they can order it at any time really. And then, yeah, it'll be ready for them on the 9th or the 18th. Yep.
So another aspect of that is they'll come up with the idea, but they're not necessarily confident in bringing it to senior leadership. So,
sure. Mm-hmm.
So I actually, from a management standpoint, that's good. I think they think things through and they want to contribute, but they may be afraid to.
Right.
And one of the other element that goes with that, and I think as you read more about millennials, and I hear this more and more, especially it was at a conference I was hearing this, they understand how to get to the top and they want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So the older generation struggles with, they see the mountain, they want to get to the top of the mountain fast, but they don't understand this. It takes time to get there. Well, the millennial generation is fine with that. Mm-hmm. Tell them how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a matter of we can't do it or won't do it. We want to do it fast because we won't stay long if there's another opportunity somewhere else. And I think every generation to a certain extent is like that.
Yeah.
They want it quicker, faster, but it's not from this thought process of, well, everything's instantaneous for them. That's the world they lived in and they grew up in. And to circle back to that point of civility, this generation has not grown up seeing civility very well displayed.
Right.
So when they see things that are different, that they're attracted to, they take a serious look at it.
Right. Yeah. Well said. Speaking of the conference, I've been at the last couple CMAA World conferences, and I noticed that the red badges, which of course are the student badges, at least it seemed to me, were predominantly females. Are you seeing that same trend?
Funny you should say that. At not only the World Conference, but the the other conference that students go to, there's a national student conference. This past year was in Philadelphia, which was an exceptional opportunity for students. That student conference is capped at 150 every year, mm-hmm. and I know, given the opportunity, they could probably double that easily.
Wow.
Just tremendous programs programs from institutions all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw that, and it's very interesting because at the Philadelphia conference, they did a session on female club managers and career track and how they got there. And it was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in my own club, I see a lot of female members are attracted to the club because they see other members. We do a lot of pictures and a lot of marketing in the club.
Mm-hmm.
So they see other female members, but at conference, I think it's more, you see it more because the attendance level of students is a little bit higher there. And really, if you look at enrollment statuses in colleges, there are more females going to programs, especially hospitality related programs,
sure,
or hospitality tourism. But I think once they get the sense of all the elements we talked about that are in the club environment, I think they go, they run hard. They're stronger. I think they're much more apt to go up to a manager and introduce themselves. They're just, I don't know if it's maturity or if it's they get it quicker, but they're highly successful in getting internships and creating the relationships with club managers in general.
Right. So
I see it as a great trend.
If that's the case, you know, in down the road in the future here, maybe 10, 15, 20 years down the road, a lot more managers are women. How is that going to change the dynamic of the management role, in your opinion?
I don't think it's going to change it much at all. Because if we look at, well, I shouldn't say that.
I think they'll be able to bring something new to the table. I think that's my personal opinion.
Well, absolutely. I mean, in terms of, when you said management role, I was thinking operationally, because that's the membership. The membership really does. I think it would absolutely bring a perspective based on the mix of the membership. Sure. So if you look at leaders within a specific club, within a membership, if the mix of that membership is also skewing towards females taking on a greater leadership role in the club itself, absolutely, because they're going to be able to bring products and services and opportunities that maybe a male manager may not have seen, but certainly I agree, a different perspective. I'm not sure if that, I think that's more an individual, you know, an individual view, but I think it's going to happen. Just in terms of, I mean, start looking at numbers, 3,000 plus clubs. It's a unique time in the private club industry where senior managers are entering retirement age. I think it doesn't matter. You're looking for the right person. I mean,
yeah, sure. In the end, I think you are. But I mean, I think as more women become members of clubs, as more women, as it seems, are going to become managers of clubs, just again, by looking at the people that are attending the conference, I feel like, you know, some of the dynamics are going to change a little bit in our club environments, and probably for in a good way. I think that's my personal opinion, though.
Oh, no, absolutely. I just think that if we're looking at it as a trend, it's early because more, at least in the college level, my observation, more females are looking at that as an opportunity, because in general, they look at a wider view of the industry segment in general.
Sure.
And when they either stumble upon or take, not even stumble upon, they take the opportunity to explore. They'll come to an open meeting and say, wow, I didn't know anything about this. Because I like to say it's the biggest secret. Private club industry is private for a reason.
Sure.
It's the biggest industry secret. And what we're trying to do, obviously, as educators on the academic side, is to create more awareness of the industry segment, either through curriculum or we host, our club chapter just got done hosting an event in conjunction with Johnson & Wales Goes Global. Mm-hmm. We're trying to do a lot of global initiatives to understand, have students understand that there are, things don't end at state borders or either within the United States, and hospitality and tourism is a global global business sector. So I Skyped in several club managers who have been very supportive of the chapter, but we took a different perspective on that. We talked about current trends, but also hiring international students, students that have different types of visa statuses. So, and I see that in terms of international student enrollment, it's also skewed towards female enrollment.
Right. Yeah. Well, I just think it's kind of interesting, and you know, anytime you have a new perspective, it brings new things to the table. So I think that's pretty cool. Let's move on from that, but talk about how clubs can actually benefit by getting more involved with these student chapters out there.
Structurally, I think the industry sector, from an association, is far, far more organized than other professional organizations in that they understand the importance of spending time and creating educational opportunities at the grassroots. So the regional CMAA chapters, of which our NECMA, New England Club Managers, is really our region, the calling the local universities or getting involved in your regional regional chapter meetings is really the first step. You certainly could, any club manager within the region, I would say, could pick up the phone, figure and find out who the club advisor is and call them directly. Say, I'm interested in creating a relationship with you. So the benefits, I think the things that have worked in our club, the benefits of creating that relationship is hosting a tour. So once a student sets foot on a club, they get it. They really understand how it's different from restaurants or hotels. And that's a huge first step. Mm-hmm. What the club manager gets is some one-on-one time to explain their kind of their career track and their thoughts and their club. I mean, every general manager likes to have time with potential new employees. And that's what it is. That's what I tell my students. You know, this one-on-one time, they're looking at you too.
Right.
And they may have opportunities. I can't tell you how many, after a club tour, how many general managers took students aside and said, hey, give me a call. I want to bring you back to the club and have lunch with you, invite you up and have a further conversation about you.
Right.
It's a great opportunity to get that first one-on-one. And that's really, you know, when you develop that relationship of reaching out in the community, the member reaction is unbelievable because on the other side, understand that the faculty advisor, you asked me some of the roles. I don't take students to clubs we have rules. They're professionally dressed. They have to be on time. We generally meet in the parking lot and then come in as a group, and they understand the environment. And students who don't follow that aren't invited back for club tours. Wow. So they have to understand where they are. Like when a student says, well, I don't understand why I have to wear a suit or wear a tie. I said, because in certain areas of the club, members are required to do that.
Right.
And we are invited guests. But the members are, you know, they'll go to the general manager. Well, what was that all about? Mm-hmm. That leads to internship hiring projects.
Yep.
We had a club member come up, actually she was the current president of the club, and said, well, what else are you doing for us, right? and that's great. You know, you come and do tours, what are we kind of getting out of it? Which was a really good question. It was kind of on the spot, and the general manager started answering it. I said, and beyond that, look, we're looking at potential projects that students can work on. Give us some of your problems. Let us chew on the bone for 10 weeks, come back and do a presentation.
Right.
Students did a great job on a Founders Day project.
Nice.
Now, we talk about club history and the ideas they came up with. I just sharing one quickly. So they said, why can't we have character actors dressed in like 1910?
Oh, that'd be cool.
but they're scripted. Like, who are you? Mm-hmm. Like, they're just wandering around. Well, I'm the wife of the club president from 1910. And let me tell you about the club in 1910.
Nice.
I mean, it's super cool. Yeah. And I don't know that I would have thought of something like that.
No, that's right? Very creative. That's extremely creative. I love getting feedback from students and from younger generations. In fact, I just did it recently. A gal up at FSU had applied to become social media manager here at my agency. And I asked her, well, just take a look at the current social media that we're doing for our own selves. And you tell me what we can do better. And some of the insights she had were just spot on and really astounding. So anytime you can pick their brain, I think that's really a great use of your time.
Well, and I think that's a great point because, you know, some of the, one of the sessions we were at, and it was a panel of senior seasoned club managers. And this was actually the young professionals presenting. Like, so the general manager doesn't understand a technology. They don't need to. Mm-hmm. It just needs to be explained. Like, they see social media and immediately they're going to, well, we can't advertise, right? That's club governance. And you know, that's that we can't do that. Mm-hmm. And why don't these young managers understand that marketing's a very sensitive issue in terms of, you know, IRS and our status with that? Well, you need to listen very carefully. Because if you can, if you use something like, you know, a Snapchat where you're creating this cloud where only the advertising is within the borders of the club, well, that creates a whole different discussion.
Sure.
Either the club member decides when they get on the club grounds that they want these pings of this is what's happening right now at the club, mm-hmm. and you can take part of it. Or they don't. They can shut it off just like unsubscribe.
Right.
But that's not. That's, you know, that's marketing within your own four walls and not doing it in paper and having it instantaneous.
Right.
So, I mean, one of the issues right now that managers in clubs are having to deal with is sometimes there are five generations of members at a club.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you want to talk about, forget about inventory, cost control, and all these other operational issues that are that go away because the club environment's not revenue driven, right? It's dues and fees. I know as an operating manager, I have $7 million at the beginning of the year to work with. So it's completely different than managing a restaurant and hotel.
Yeah.
But now, how do you service four or five generations of members? Well, you need four or five generations of managers, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's
or at least
really,
input. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yep. I totally agree with that. Well, unfortunately, we got to wrap things up here. Our time's coming to an end. But if folks want to learn more, Matt, and get a hold of you, pick your brain a little bit, or learn more about the advisory position and what you can do with the interns there, how do they get a hold of you?
Oh, sure. So I can be contacted through email. That's Matthew, two T's, dot, last name is Samuel, S-A-M-E-L, at J-W-U. edu, or you can call me directly at area code 401-598-1296. And we're located in Providence, Rhode Island, but the Johnson Wales University actually has four campuses located Providence, Charlotte, North Carolina, North Miami, and Denver, Colorado, and all the regional campuses also support club chapters.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Matt, so much for coming on, bringing us your expertise. I really enjoyed the conversation and hope to get you back here again on another edition of Private Club Radio. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. And anytime, please just give me a call. I enjoyed it very much.
Well, that's going to do it for this week on Private Club Radio. Thanks again for joining me as always. And I hope to see you back here. Episode number 71 is going to be a good one. I promise. I'll see you next week. Until then, here's to your membership success.
Private Club Radio is brought to you by the Private Club Agency, the premier marketing and consulting firm dedicated to helping clubs increase and retain their membership. Visit privateclubagency.com to learn more.